Hi, I'm Nora Cavani, and this is Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, your trusted source on child gut health, brought to you by Alba Health, live on the UK Health Radio. Thousands of studies now link a child's gut health to common symptoms like colic, constipation, and eczema, as well as to long-term health risks like allergies, asthma, and obesity. In each episode, I speak with global experts and scientists to explore the latest research on children's nutrition, gut health, and well-being. Let's dive into the science. Did you know your gut and brain are in constant conversation? It's a two-way street. Your brain sends signals to your gut, and your gut sends signals right back. At the heart of this dialogue is the gut microbiome, the trillions of microbes living in our digestive tract. Studies have linked the gut microbiome to anxiety, stress, depression, mood, and cognition. And this connection might be even more crucial in childhood. In fact, 80% of a child's brain develops by the age of 3, a window when foundational skills like memory, language, and reasoning begins to take shape. Welcome to Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids. Today, we dive into the science of the gut-brain connection and what it means for mental health from infancy to adulthood. We're going to talk about how the gut-brain connection works, its association with mental health, and what that means for your daily life. Our guest today is Dr. Mireia Vallès-Colomer, a renowned microbiome scientist from Pompeu Fabra University in Spain. Her research explores how gut bacteria influence brain chemistry, mood, and mental health. Dr. Vallès-Colomer was a lead researcher on the first population-level study linking the gut microbiome to anxiety and depression. This work was so influential, it was recognized as a milestone in human microbiota research by Nature in 2019. Welcome, Mireia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Why did you decide to work in this field and explore the gut-brain connection?
So, yeah, I was studying biomolecular sciences in Brussels, in Belgium at the time, when I had a course on the microbiome. That's the first time when I started hearing about all these microorganisms that live within our bodies and how important they are for our health. So I decided to, already from my master's thesis, to join a group that was researching the microbiome. And then I continued with my PhD in there, but I started to hear about how the microbiome could also be linked to mental health. I found that was something crazy. And I was like, okay, let's try to study this in a systematic way and actually see how much there is of that connection.
That's fantastic. And yes, the gut-brain connection I've read has been studied for centuries. We've known there is a connection for such a long time, but recently there has been more and more research on it and really trying to get into the mechanisms and how this really works. So let's get right into that. What is the gut-brain axis and how do the gut and brain talk?
So we find the gut-brain axis as the bidirectional communication system integrating neural, endocrine, and immune signaling between the gut and the brain. What I just mentioned is the technical definition, but here the important points are, first, that it's bidirectional. So as you say in the introduction, there is communication from gut to brain and also from brain to gut. Actually, many people have comorbid mental health and intestinal conditions. Or, for example, when we are nervous, for example, before an exam, we can notice bowel movements as well. But it can also go the other way around. So there are also gut issues that can also have an impact on mental health. Then I also said it's going through neural, endocrine, and immune signaling. Neural, that's through mostly through the vagus nerve. That's a nerve that connects the gut and the brain. Or there is also the enteric nervous system, which is a very complex layer of neurons in our gut. There's also endocrine signaling. This means mostly hormones like cortisol, the main stress hormone, or also immune as microorganisms in our gut train the immune system. But then they are also linked to this very complex interaction between inflammation, pathogens, mental health, and our healthy inhabitants. Then you might ask, what's the role actually of the microbiome in this connection? So these microorganisms that are living in our gut, they can modulate all these host neural and endocrine immune responses. But besides this, they also produce a wide range of neuroactive compounds. So molecules that can influence, can have an influence on our brain, like neurotransmitters, such as serotonin, dopamine, or GABA, which are all molecules that appeared very early in evolution. So bacteria also have them. And this is perhaps the most direct way of communication and the way in which we've always focused.
Okay, so it seems very complex in the sense that there's many pathways on how the gut and the brain interact. So you mentioned that the gut microbiome can produce neurotransmitters, so like serotonin, dopamine, and GABA. How does that work and how much of those do they produce?
That's something that we started studying in the publication in 2019, but we still don't know exactly the answer in very high detail. What we know is that many of the microorganisms in our gut have the metabolic pathways to produce all these neurotransmitters. What we are now looking at is if there are different pathways for them to produce them, because it could be that they are producing the same molecule, but through a different mechanism. So in the last decade or two, there has been this explosion in the field, mostly through an improvement on the techniques to study the microbiome. And so thanks to these advancements in the techniques, now we know that there are many microorganisms that live within us that have not yet been characterized. So when we study the microbiome, we just sequence everything that is out there. And sometimes through sequencing, we see the genomes, so the genetic material, of some organisms that have never been cultivated. So we've never seen them under the microscope, but we see that they are still there. So we are still trying to see if these microorganisms that are also very important for our health can also produce which neuroactive compounds. And we see that actually, yes, they can produce many of them. What is actually not always clear is their fate. So we know they have, they can actually produce these compounds, but we do not always know whether what's produced in the gut by these bacteria can actually cross the intestinal epithelium and then the blood-brain barrier in order to reach the brain. Still, we see that some of these compounds could still play a role, could still influence mental health without necessarily having to reach it through the other pathways of gut-to-brain communication.
Okay. And are there some specific bacteria that produce these compounds, or can all of them produce them?
So virtually any bacterium can produce one or another neuroactive compounds. But yes, there are some that produce many more than others.
Which ones are they?
So I could start here with a very long list of bacteria. It depends on the compounds you're interested in. In our first publication, we're mentioning some neuroactive specialists, which we defined as those that can produce multiple of the rare neurotransmitters in bacteria. But we are seeing more and more that the picture is more complex than that. They're like mostly, I mean, to me, the important message here is that we can have a catalog of bacteria, and any of them will be producing one compound of another. So depending then if you want to think about potential treatments, depending on what compound you want it to get produced, you would need to have one bacterium or another.
Okay, Okay. And in the gut microbiome is an ecosystem, and it seems like diversity also matters a lot, and it's been associated with health. Is it the same with mental health? So it seems like many bacteria produce different compounds. Is it then desirable, better for the gut-brain connection to have many different kinds of bacteria?
Yeah, in general, yes. But as always in research, the answer is never very simple. So yeah, we do see that in multiple mental health-related conditions, there is a decrease in diversity, both the diversity of bacteria that are there and their capabilities. So indeed, when you have this reduced diversity, that's something that is not good for you. And in general, you would be interested in having more complex ecosystem with more different bacteria performing more different functions. And that's something that would also be more resilient as an ecosystem.
And how, so you mentioned that we still don't know if these neuroactive compounds reach the brain. If they do, how do they get there from the gut?
Some could cross potentially the intestinal epithelium, go into bloodstream, and then eventually cross up to the brain. That's actually the same that could be true both for the compounds that are produced by bacteria in the gut and also by our cells in the gut. But as I said, that's something that is not necessary condition. And as if they can, these compounds can signal to the enteric nervous system in the gut, then the signal can be the one traveling and the compound does not need to travel itself.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano. Flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the ukhealthradio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Right, so what is the enteric nervous system?
It's this complex layer of neurons that are there within our gut. So this brought people to talk about this second brain, the brain within the gut. But in more simple terms, just that we have strong ramifications over there.
Do we know if the gut microbiome could interact with that as well?
Yes, it definitely does. Actually, all these more mechanistic studies have been usually done in animal models. It's never straightforward then to translate what has been found in animal models to humans. But in this case, as it's something really going into the mechanism, I would think that this is also happening in humans.
Yeah. So you mentioned one pathway that the gut interacts with the brain is through neurotransmitters, so the endocrine way. The other one is the enteric nervous system, so the brain in the gut, you could say, or the nervous system in the gut. You also mentioned through the immune system. How does that work?
Yeah. So maybe another detail on this, more the neural communication, so that's the enteric nervous system, but also there is the vagus nerve that would be the more direct connection. But then so the immune system, there the important point is that one of the main roles for the microbiome to support our health is that it trains our immune system and it also excludes pathogens. So just by occupying the space, then it's hard for a pathogen to colonize our gut. And also then they fight for nutrients, so there is not food for the pathogen to be established there. Another more specific role for the mental health connection is that what we consider a healthy microbiome is also one that would be anti-inflammatory. So this means that it produces compounds that reduce inflammation. For example, butyrate. This is an important one. And we know that there is a strong connection between inflammation, stress, and suboptimal mental health. So if we have a microbiome that is reducing our levels of inflammation, that's something that is going to be beneficial for us.
Definitely. It seems like inflammation could be at the root cause of many chronic diseases or problems that we can have nowadays. And what about the vagus nerve? We didn't talk about that.
So yeah, that's also what I mentioned as one of the direct neural ways of communication. So that's a very long nerve going from the brain almost to the gut. And of course, if bacteria can signal to this nerve, then there is a very direct way of communication.
How do they communicate with it? Is it still through the neurotransmitters?
Yes. The nerve, indeed, so what you would get is the stimuli, the signal that the neurotransmitters would send to it.
All right. So we talked about the endocrine way, so the neurotransmitters, the enteric nervous system and vagus nerve, and the immune system. Are there other ways that the gut and brain communicate?
So the enteric way, that would be more the hormones. So where I mentioned the example of cortisol, that's mostly through the HPA system, so hypothalamic pituitary adrenal system. At the end, this system, it leads to a release of cortisol from the adrenal glands. Cortisol is the main stress hormone. And it's important because cortisol influences microbial metabolism and what bacteria can be in there and which ones would have a harder time in establishing. But more recently, it was also shown that there are some bacteria that they can cut cortisol themselves, while some others could potentially produce it. So that's also another way, and how through hormones, the microbiome is also playing a role in mental health.
Which bacteria can reduce cortisol or boost it? Do we know exactly which bacteria they are?
So there have been some publications in which they give some examples of bacteria that can do that. There is Agarthella and one Clostridium bacterium. But actually, we then analyzed whether the genes to do these are found in other bacteria, and we see that actually there are many others that have the same. So we think that many more could also cleave cortisol. What's interesting is that actually many of the lactobacilli and bifidobacteria that are mostly used as probiotics, they don't do this. So it would be many, but different bacteria from the usual candidates that are used as probiotics.
It was very interesting. I went to a conference some time ago about probiotics. It's one of the biggest events in that space. And so many lectures focused on the role of probiotics in mental health. So it seems to be a huge area of research and kind of seeing how bacteria can influence mental health. But let's get to, I have a question on probiotics, but a bit later. Now we talked about how the gut affects the brain, but it seems to be that the brain can also affect the gut microbiome. How does that work?
So actually, the roots of communication are mostly the same. So as I mentioned, the gut-brain axis is this bidirectional system. So the neural, endocrine, and immune roots would count here as well. One very clear example is through stress. So then there can be effects on the microbiome that can go through cortisol or through inflammation. That would be, in my opinion, the most clear example.
Yeah. And so now it seems like we know quite a lot about these mechanisms. But of course, there are also many people that are skeptical or say we still don't know anything about the gut microbiome. What do we know? And, you know, how would you say, where do you say we are in terms of research?
Actually, there is a lot of research on it and a lot more in progress. I would think that on the microbiome, we are knowing more and more, and now we know quite a bit. What we know less about is the connection between the microbiome and mental health. So I understand that there is some skepticism, also because there have been a lot of overstatements, a lot of information out there that is not scientifically backed up. So yes, that's something that needs to be contrasted. As actually findings, there are some findings that look very promising. As I said, sometimes these are in animal models and we are not sure yet if this would work in humans as well. So it's also important when you might see in the press that there has been a finding, see where that was in animal models or that's already been validated in humans. And the other point also is that yes, we are knowing more and more. Sometimes we actually just have associations. So we know that individuals that have a certain condition, they have alterations in their microbiome, but we don't know if this relationship is causal. And if it was actually what caused what? So if it was first the alteration in the microbiome or the mental health issue. And actually it could be it's both because as we mentioned, this is a bidirectional communication system. And then to me, the other issue is that, for example, you mentioned all this interest in probiotics or psychobiotics, that would be the probiotics that are targeted at improving mental health. But yes, there has been a lot of research, but in my opinion, it still has to make its way into specific applications that actually benefit patients. And there is a lot being said, but so far not a very clear treatment, a specific one that is going to improve your mental health in a dramatic way.
Yeah. And then maybe switching exactly to this topic, so the association with mental health, anxiety, depression, stress, what do we know about that? So what are the main associations between the gut microbiome and kind of mental health conditions or statuses? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, also there have been many studies that what they did was comparing the microbiome of a group of patients to another of a group of healthy controls, and then seeing and reporting what the differences are. The important point there is that there are many other factors beside the disease that could also influence the composition of the microbiome, like different diet, maybe the medication, lifestyle, and so on. So it's often hard to know if the alterations that we are observing are due to the disease itself or to many other factors. That now, there are improved methods through statistics to take these effects into account, and more projects that go into the mechanisms to try to understand exactly why there is that association. So not only reporting it, but also going into the why, explaining what's going on. In general, what we see is that, yes, patients tend to have alterations in their microbiomes. And the most consistent signatures is, again, through inflammation. So higher abundances of pro-inflammatory bacteria, so those that can actually live with inflammation, and some of them actually sustain it or even create more. So that's how the altered microbiome gets into a negative feedback loop in which there is some inflammation and the microbiome even promotes it more. In contrast, there is, in general, slightly decreased microbiome diversity, something that we mentioned earlier, and less of the church and fatty acid producers. So we also mentioned butyrate earlier as a molecule that tends to decrease inflammation. And since that's something quite important, as that's something that has been reported in many different studies, in many different populations, and for different conditions.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So is it all anxiety, depression, stress? Do you see these traits for all of these kind of conditions?
That's the general traits that you would see in all.
Yeah. So the general traits would be lower microbial diversity, higher pro-inflammatory bacteria, and lower bacteria that produce short-chain fatty acids, which is maybe for our listeners that don't know about that. What are short-chain fatty acids?
So these are just kind of molecules, including mostly acetate, butyrate, propionate, that are used by bacteria in their metabolism in different ways. But the most important one is butyrate for its link with inflammation. Actually, butyrate is a molecule that is made by bacteria alone. Our bodies do not produce it. And it's made from fibers. So that's why it's important that we have fibers in our diet, because in this way, our bacteria will produce butyrate that then decreases the inflammation in our bodies.
Exactly. And so which are the main mental health conditions that are associated or have been linked to the gut microbiome? So we mentioned anxiety and depression. Is there any other?
Yeah. Actually, for any disease you can think of, you'll find some project where they found some alterations. So even if we go more to brain health, there is very clear alterations in Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, and so on and so forth. For when we go into mood, depression is where there have been the most studies and where we start having some consistent associations that are not specific to a certain population or not due to maybe specific antidepressant, but more these general traits.
Can the gut microbiome also affect emotions and our mood?
Potentially, yes. And again, but there we would have to move to mice models in which there are more clear proofs. But there are like some studies like that are almost 20 years old now, where they started with mice without a microbiome. It's called the germ-free mice. And after adding, so giving them some bacteria, so starting to populate their microbiomes, anxiety-ready behaviors were decreasing. So that would be a clear proof that, of course, we can only have in animal models. We cannot have it in humans. But it's giving an indication of how this can potentially work.
What are the most established associations among these ones?
So yes, in if you want to think of in humans, they're having indeed some studies, giving some probiotics and seeing also some improvements. In general, what you see, again, as the strongest sign, or at least the ones that are most consistent across the studies, are those on like reducing inflammation when there is inflammation. Because, of course, not all the patients, for example, with depression have intestinal inflammation. But those that have, then actually you can think that some treatment that is targeting the microbiome could help decreasing it.
And what do we know about how diet affects mental health? So you mentioned that fiber is very important for our gut and then also can affect mental health.
Yeah, so diet can affect mental health in many different ways. We can think even from a more psychological perspective through reward circuits. But if we think about the microbiome, at the end, diet is what's giving food also to our microbiome. So there will be a strong difference if we are giving fibers to the bacteria that are actually using these fibers to get energy, or if we give just like sugars, for example, that any bacteria will use, that's a fast energy source. But potentially we also have those bacteria that are promoting inflammation. Depending on the diet that we are getting or we're giving to our kids, so there will be some bacteria in the microbiome that will get a competitive advantage, they will have it easier. And this will strongly modulate the final composition that we see.
So it seems like eating a lot of fiber, maybe also diverse kind of fiber, sources of fiber could help the gut microbiome.
Yeah, that would be the first and possibly most important piece of advice, eating of fibers and enough different ones.
And the gut microbiome is particularly important in the first years of life for many reasons. Why is that? And could it also affect brain development and mental health?
Yeah, so that's a very important point, actually. When we are born, so the placenta is close to sterile. We get the first microorganisms that are going to start populating our microbiomes from our mother during birth and soon thereafter. Birth is a very important moment. And then during the early days, our microbiome starts to get populated through also influences from our other caregivers, the father, siblings, peers, and so on. Then around 3 years of age, the microbiome is already matured and it starts to look more like that of an adult. So that's a much more stable composition that it's more difficult to change. But in the very beginning, that's something that is still under development. And of course, also the brain is under development in those ages. So it's important to see how this would be related. There have been some studies trying to link the two. In general, taking care of our microbiome is, of course, important always, but especially during our first years.
And are there any factors that could impact the gut microbiome negatively?
Yes, in general, any input that would lead to a regression in this maturation would be something negative. So, for example, if we get an infection and we have to get antibiotics, then a lot of the microbiome gets rid of. So then the infant needs to start again from scratch in populating this microbiome. That would be an important one. Of course, don't get me wrong, antibiotics are very important to help fight infections. But of course, they also have negative side effects on the microbiome. And then when we think of factors, so the mode of delivery is very important. So vaginal birth in contrast to C-section deliveries, that's important because in cesarean or C-section deliveries, there is no sealing through the vaginal canal. So there is already a disruption, plus another one, which is that in most cases, the mothers get antibiotics as a prophylactic treatment. So then, of course, they also have less of the bacteria that they can give to their children. So yes, mode of delivery. Then another one would be mode of feeding. So formula or breast feeding. That's also, of course, important. And all the environment around.
Do we know if breastfeeding can have a positive impact also on brain development during this time?
Actually, I'm not sure whether this has been directly shown. One would think so, even if in an indirect way, as breast milk has human milk oligosaccharides that are great sources of nutrients for that the microorganisms need in these moments.
And the gut microbiome has also been associated with some conditions that appear in childhood, for example, autism. What do we know about that?
Yeah, that's an important topic. There has been lots of work on this, and not all of the results go in the same direction. So we have to be a bit careful here. Some studies found differences in the microbiomes of autistic as compared to neurotypical children, but the differences that they report are not always the same ones. And actually, it seems that many of these changes could be due to diet. So many children with autism, they develop picky eating behaviors, so they avoid certain types of foods. And of course, through diet, this is going to affect the composition of their microbiomes. Then, recently, it seems that even if you take into account the effect of diet, there is still something different in the microbiomes of autistic children. And what we found that I thought was also very interesting is that when comparing the fraction of the microbiomes that children with autism shared with their parents as compared to what their neurotypical siblings shared, the autistic children shared less. So this, of course, could be due to different behavior, less social interaction, but it seems to be contributing to the differences in their microbiomes.
And are there any patterns that are particular beneficial in the gut microbiome, especially for children, or is it very similar to adults?
So if we think of children as after 3 years of age, the recommendations could be very similar to those in adults. So for diet, just fibers would help, yogurt or other fermented foods like kefir, less ultra-processed foods. All this would be, of course, beneficial. If we think of infants, mostly what they will have, especially before weaning, is the bacteria that are optimized to use the oligosaccharides that come from the mother. So this lactic acid bacteria and bifidobacteria. So the composition is a different one and we have to think in a different way.
Yes, it's very different, especially before 6 months and introducing solids. If we go to what are the behaviors that can support our gut microbiome and also potentially support our mental health. So we already talked about diet and fiber being important. Do we know if there are specific, let's say, vegetables or sources of fiber that are particularly important for the gut and for mental health and gut-brain connection?
In general, I would say this should be the main take-home message. Then, of course, there is more than just saying eat fibers. So more personalized ways could also help. And in general, getting vegetables that are more diverse and sustain health in a better way.
So we talked about how diet is very important for our gut microbiome and then to support our mental health. Is there any specific source of fiber that is even more beneficial for our gut microbiome?
In general, what we see here is that vegetables are important. It's difficult to give very specific recommendations on what vegetables should be eating. But in general, a diet rich in vegetables and fruits would be beneficial.
So a lot of fiber and diversity of fiber, the classic eat the rainbow kind of recommendation.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Great. And then coming back to probiotics that we mentioned before, what do we know about probiotics and mental health?
So yeah, there has been a lot of research in animal models, mostly with bifidobacteria or lactic acid bacteria strains. And some of the effects that were found were actually promising. Then in humans, there are less, actually some showing no effects. So it's also important to take into account that not everything that has been reported in animals would be then playing an important role in humans. But yeah, there is potentially a beneficial role for probiotics. This said, I don't think we necessarily need to get probiotic supplementations. Actually, if we think through years and years of evolution, probiotics as formulation were not used and would still get very diverse and healthy microbiomes. So that's something that can support gut health, especially, for example, after antibiotic treatment, but something that is not necessarily per se.
Would you say diet is more important than probiotics?
Yeah, through diet, you can have much stronger effects on the whole ecosystem, in contrast with the probiotics that are available at the moment. Even when there is a cocktail, you are not giving a whole diversity of microbiome, whole diversity of species that is really going to benefit your microbiome. There is now important efforts in getting other bacteria commercialized as probiotics. And I think that's also very important because many studies where we see are missing in patients with mental health related conditions is not that the bacteria that are normally given in probiotics are missing, but it's some other ones like the butyrate producers. So I do think that getting these other bacteria available would be very important.
And what do you think is the future of gut-brain axis research? What will we be able to solve or treat in this space?
I'm really hoping that all this research that has been conducted for many years and it's really advancing our knowledge gets the way to clinical applications. So one way would be through more personalized dietary recommendations, and the other is better supplementations in case of need. Saying, okay, this person is lacking this bacteria. Can we actually give the bacteria that the person is lacking?
Fantastic. This is very exciting. It was so interesting to learn all of these very complex interactions that happen between our gut and our brain. Thank you so much, Mireia. This was extremely interesting. Thank you so much for explaining us this complex topic.
Thank you very much, Nora.
I'm Nora Cavani, and thank you for joining me on Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, live on UK Health Radio. This episode was brought to you by Alba Health. We analyze your child's gut health, provide personalized nutrition plans, and coaching for the best start in life. We are the first and only company with a large clinical study on child gut health, and our team counts over 1,600 scientific publications in this topic. We translate this complex science into simple, personalized actions for families. Thanks for listening and see you next time.